The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and as always, I'm joined by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. Our guest this week has both played and managed in the county. His playing career took in the likes of Grayson and Northfleet, Margate and Maidstone. As a manager, he enjoyed more than seven seasons in charge of Maidstone. Two playoff wins and a league title in 4 years saw them rise to the top flight of non-league football. It all came to an abrupt end in August, but he's now back in the dugout, down at Margate, where he's enjoying a successful close to the current season. It's a warm welcome to Jay Saunders. Jay, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let's start with Margate. How are you getting on this season? I've got the stats from when you took over. 5 points off relegation, 28 games played and 30 points. And now 10 games later, 23 points later, you're 18 points off relegation. How did you do it?
Do you know what? We haven't changed a lot. I went in there, obviously, working with Mike Sandman and brought in a couple of forwards. I'd seen them a bit after leaving Maidstone. I went down and watched a couple of games, obviously being an old club. And I just felt they needed a few goals in the team, a few more attacking options. And that's what we did. Defensively, we've been very good all season. So we just sort of went back to basics a bit more 4-4-2 and went with two forwards up there and tried to be a bit more open and a bit more, I don't want to say direct, but get balls in the box and sort of get a big success that way. And it's worked. The boys have bought into it and, yeah, it's been a really good run and sort of enjoyable. You never think it's going to go as well as it has, but it's gone really well and I'm pleased that we've been able to turn it around.
That was going to be my next question. Has it gone better than you thought? I mean, what were your expectations when you went in there?
I think if you're solid defensively, you've always got a chance, and they were that. The back four or five, should I say, since I've been there, Friendly, Swifty, Millsy, Connor Diamond's gone at right back, have been excellent for us, and that gave us a base to sort of build on. And I kind of felt that just adding a couple of goals, we could go on a good run. Obviously, I didn't expect, sort of, before Saturday, seven wins and two draws. That's brilliant. But, it has definitely gone better than you expected. I was confident that we could get safe, and that was the main aim from the club. They sort of said, look, we want to be in this league next season. So I think up until Saturday, a few people were saying, can we make playoffs? But that was never a target for me. It was just kind of, can we get safe and then go from there? And now we've set a target at top 10. That would be ideal. That'd be a great way to finish the season and be a good success from where a club was at when we came in.
You mentioned playoffs. We discussed it once or twice in the office last week, we've got to admit. I mean, is there part of you that almost wishes that you'd taken the job on 2 or 3 weeks earlier? And, you know, you were just a couple of games away, possibly, from making a genuine bid for it.
Yeah, and even Saturday, I suppose, if we'd have won, and we deserve to win the game Saturday. They've had two shots, and Jamie Curran scored an unbelievable goal against us that's lost us the game. But, maybe. You never know. But it would have been a big ask, but it would have been nice to have really pushed and had a go at it. But we came in when we did, and as I say, the club asked, can you get us safe? And I was quite confident that I could, or we could, shall I say, as a squad. And we've done that. And so that part of it, my sort of job's done, if you like. We now want to, I've set the boys' target a top 10. And if we do that, like I say, it'd be a good achievement.
How much have you enjoyed being back involved in the game?
Really enjoyed it. It's been a change. Obviously, you go from the full-time sort of side of football, or morning football, shall I say, to back to training evenings. And some old characters like Roger and Franny and Flisher and Millsy, all the old boys that have played for me over the years. So it was quite weird walking back in the dressing room. But on the flip side of that, it was nice knowing that they were there and you had people that you could trust in and knew what I was about. And so it helped. But I've really enjoyed it. It's a good club. It's a club that I sort of knew a lot of supporters still down there. I've always been treated well when I went back there. I played, I think, nearly 400 games for the club. So it's somewhere that played a big part in my life. So it was... Although I had a few other offers, it was the one that sort of jumped out at me to go back in.
In the 5.5 months since being out of management, what was it that you missed about the job?
I think the Saturdays. It's just that playing for 3 points, suddenly being on the line. You can't beat, and being around the squad and just, there's just that buzz. I mean, since I took over as a manager, I get more of a buzz from getting 3 points than I did as a player. I think as a player, you'd win on a Saturday and you sort of go out on a Saturday night, have a few drinks and you turn up Tuesday, start training again, and that's what you did. You kind of forgot about the Saturday. As a manager, you're planning all week, and you when you get them 3 points, you enjoy it, and certainly you enjoy your drink a bit more on a Saturday night.
So it is all consuming, you know, when you're a manager. Yeah. The buck does stop with you in so many ways.
It does, and there's no better feeling. And even I think winning and getting promotions and things, you go away from it, and it sinks in and lasts a lot longer than I think you realise what an achievement is. As a player, you always think the next one's around the corner. And I think then when your career ends and you go into management, you realise that that's not the case.
Did you miss it more than you thought? Because I remember talking to you after the game at Tunbridge, one of the things you said afterwards was you even missed agents ringing you up and offering your players. I mean, did you really miss it that much?
I didn't for the first probably 4 or so months. I quite enjoyed it. Went off to New York, had a nice break, and I was thinking this is nice, actually, having a few Saturdays off. And then it started to creep in, and you think, yeah. And I went in at Bromley, and I started to really miss it then, I think, when I could see sort of Neil Smith signing players and sort of speaking to a couple of agents from then, of agents I knew, and I kind of started to miss it and thought, well, I need to get back in here now. I need to sort of be in charge of somewhere and start enjoying it again. And that was, yeah, it started right at the end. I thought, right, now's the time to get back in. And as I say, I had a couple of offers, similar level to what Margate are at, and I just felt that this was the right one.
Was you thinking, I've got to go somewhere where actually my reputation's going to be on the line here, so I need to go somewhere that's going to give me the tools or has got the squad that I can actually work with and I can see where I can make the improvements?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the offers I had, the team at the time was sort of 4 points off playoffs in the Ryman Prem, or Bostic Prem, I should say. So I could have sort of gone there and maybe challenged for a chance of playoffs and promotion. The club didn't feel right for me when I went and watched. I just didn't get a good vibe off it. Obviously, Margate was a side where it was a gamble. If I'd have gone in there and we'd have got relegated, it would have looked bad on myself. And obviously, after what happened at Maidstone, then you sort of, where do you go from here? You're really starting again. So it was a gamble, but I was always confident in my ability that I could help turn the fortunes around, and we'd been able to do that. And that's not me being arrogant or anything. It's just I'm confident in my ability and getting the best out of a squad, and managed to do that. And I just felt that, yeah, they had a good squad. There's no doubt about it. They've been unfortunate with injuries this year. We added Noel Leighton, Cadell Daniels and Toby Show Silva were the main three we added, and they've made a massive difference. And obviously Cadell's gone back, but Toby and Noel up top have been excellent for us.
Had the Margate job not come up before the end of the season, could you envisage yourself not being involved until the summer?
I did, yeah, I did. To be honest, just before we got offered the sort of job, I thought that was it. I was going to write the season off, see what came up in the summer. But it's funny, I was chatting to Peter Taylor. I had a good chat with him on the phone and at the time. And just after Bromley played Dagenham, and we was having a chat, and he sort of, a bit of advice he gave me, he just sort of said, look, sometimes it's easier to sort of get a job when you're in a job or be back, put yourself back in the shop window sort of thing. He said, whenever I was out of work, I could never get back in. So he said, when a job comes up and it feels half all right, then take it. And obviously the Margate one come up, and it felt right, because being an old club and knowing everyone down there, it just felt right. And it's turned out well.
Coming out of the National League, as you say, you were working with the players in the daytime at Maidstone, dropping a couple of leagues to Margate, back to the part-time in the evening training. How transferable is the stuff that you were doing with Maidstone to going into Bostic Premier? Do you have to change much?
Not really. It was a funny one at Maidstone, because we did 3 mornings, but obviously if you had games, sometimes it was 2 mornings. They weren't really full-time, I don't think, for that level. And I didn't realise that until I went into Bromley and Neil Smith down there and working with the fellas there. They've done an unbelievable job there, and the setup they've got, you realise that that's a proper full-time club. And that was when, then going to Margate, I probably noticed it the most. But I'm quite fortunate. I went in, it wasn't like I walked in at Maidstone and they were in the National League and we're doing daytime. I sort of started out, we were ground sharing at Sittingbourne and Ashford when I first took over, and I think the first weekend it was released players and some of them had been mates, so I kind of went in at the deep end, if you like, and learned that way. So it's not like I hadn't managed at level before or didn't know the setup, so it wasn't a massive culture shock. So for me it's been okay. It is a change, there's no doubt about it. And obviously the sort of professionalism of the lads you get at a high level, the fitness levels is different, but there's some really good honest lads at Margate and lads that want to do well still, and some good up and coming young lads, and I've really enjoyed it.
Do you think the break since August had helped you recharge the batteries?
Definitely. It had been a tough last year at Maidstone. There was a lot of things that went on that I wasn't happy with on the footballing side, that I felt my hands were tied on a lot of things. So I needed that break. I didn't realise at the time, and I didn't want to leave in that way, because I still think I could offer a lot. But in a way, coming away now and having that break, I wouldn't have liked to have gone straight back into another job. I think I needed to have them few months off and really sort of get the sort of bug back for it, if you like.
Mm. Tell us about the day that you lost your job at Maidstone.
it seems a long time ago now. It was I mean, I just said then, my hands were tied and things, I felt. First of all, the National League's an extension of Football League. There's no doubt about it. It's one of the toughest leagues out there, and I think you can see that how long it takes big clubs to get out of it. This season, I felt that I needed to maybe step away from the academy a bit and sort of concentrate on doing the first team, being out watching players and stuff. And on the day I sort of lost my job, I was on a minibus driving course so that I could drive the academy lads on a Wednesday to games. And I got a phone call from Bill saying that there was going to be a meeting, could I possibly get there? And it was ridiculous, really. And that kind of summed up where I was at the club. It was a Wednesday, I could have been out watching, or Tuesday, I could have been out watching an under-23 game, maybe looking at players, and I was sort of renewing minibus licence, which is quite comical when I look back now. But and I sort of went down to the office and we sat in there with Terry and Bill, and it was kind of put to me that they weren't happy with a few things, as I wasn't happy with a few things, and we sort of went through it, and that was the end of it, really. They felt that to move the club forward, or the performances hadn't been good enough, and that they needed to act to keep themselves safe, which kind of hasn't worked out.
That time in charge of Maidstone been such a big part of your football career and your life. So to walk away from the ground that day knowing that was it, what went through your head?
It's a bit of a weird one. I went straight into Maidstone Town Centre and bought a beer, really, and sat down. It was a bit strange because we'd played Maidenhead on the Saturday on TV, and we actually played really well. Like, I've watched the game back since the first time because there was nothing on TV at home, so I thought I'd have a watch back. And actually, we played really well, and should have been 3-1 up, and we had a goal disallowed for no reason, and then we let in two poor goals at the end through our inexperience. And then we played Boreham Wood on the Monday, and we were rubbish. We were poor. Boreham Wood were really experienced, the opposite of us, and deservedly beat us. So it all happened quite quick. And on the Tuesday, I was out of a job. So I had the feeling, I knew something was happening. I'd spoke to a close friend of mine, and he said, how's everything going? I said, I've got a feeling the first opportunity I get, they're going to get rid of me just because of what had happened over the summer. It was weird. I walked in town, had a beer, and rang my dad and said, Dad, I've lost my job. Can you come and pick us up? Because I had the club van, so I left that there, and I said, yeah, Dad, can you come and pick us up? And that was it. I went home and that was it, really. So it was, and from that point on, I sort of didn't really have any contact from the club. I think that the best I got, the disappointing thing for me was how it was done. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to the players, and there were some players that had been there a long time under me. The staff, I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to them. I got a text message from one of the owners saying thanks for your efforts, which I thought was poor, if I'm honest with you, after working at a club for that long. No other contact than a text message from him. But I had a meeting with the other owner, but that was kind of it. I never got a chance to sort of say goodbye, even the supporters, really, and it was disappointing after that time.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
When you mentioned the summer, you're talking about the Macclesfield interest. Just remind us sort of what happened there, how that played out.
It was a strange one. It all came about when we played Macclesfield. We played them away and beat them 3-1, and we were excellent. Piggott and Zavon Irons caused them all sorts of problems. Then we played them at home. I think it was quite well publicised. Our first game was cancelled because our players couldn't get there. We played them in the replay, and we drew with them, and again, we're very good. And at the end of the game, the owner of Macclesfield came up to Terry, Bill and myself and said, look, we want him to be the next manager of our club, which was a bit strange, but it was kind of, that was how it was. And I kind of took it with a pinch of salt. And then there was contact made. Bill rang me, said Macclesfield had contacted him. Could I have a chat? And obviously not being on contract, I said, I'd like to have a chat. I met him the first time. And it was a weird one. The manager was still there. So he hadn't left, although he was leaving, he hadn't actually gone. And I just said, look, this doesn't feel right. I'll leave it. And then they come back about 2 weeks later, he'd left. And Bill said to me, look, if I want to speak to you again, and what's your feelings? And I think they were surprised that I wanted to speak to him again. But in that time, I kind of said I'd like a contract after working there for 8-9 years without a contract. And the club refused, said, no, we're not giving contracts, which disappointed me because players had 2-year deals and I'm sitting there without a contract. So I agreed to go and talk to him. I met him in London, offered me a deal, and I kind of come away from it thinking, yeah, I'm going there. So on I think it was the Wednesday, I was meant to go up there Thursday morning, pick somewhere to live, and it all be announced and signed. And then overnight, I couldn't sleep. And I think I disappointed my mate Nick because he had a bet on me going because he knew I was going. And I woke up in the morning, he went, you're not going, are you? And I said, no, I'm not. for my kids, basically, I didn't go. And, I rang Macclesfield, said, look, I can't go through with it. I rang Bill, I said, Bill, look, I've had a change of heart. And Bill was pleased. But I just felt from that point, I mean, I probably shot myself in the foot a little bit because I did tell him a few home truths that with regards to whoever they got in next, they needed to maybe look after and not take them for granted and look at contracts and look at doing things that the club needs.
So you were almost speaking there as a manager who almost left,
yeah,
was leaving.
Yeah, when I had the chat with Bill on the night before. I was disappointed at the time as I was leaving. I never got a call from either the owners or anyone at the club to really, other than Bill, to say, look, we really want you to stay. What can we do to help you stay? Which I thought I deserved. I didn't get that. And there was a few things. I wanted a goalkeeping coach. I wanted a few things that nothing outrageous that I felt would help us at that level. I mean, I thought it was outrageous we didn't have a goalkeeping coach and things like that at that level, but we didn't. I had no scouting, and I see current managers, like the management team there, Hakan and John, who I've got a lot of time for, sort of saying about their scouting. They've got scouts out there. I've never had a scout, so we used to do it all ourselves, and it was just at that level. I think we needed more. And then from that point on, I just felt the relationship wasn't quite the same. And as I say, I kind of knew at that point that I thought sooner or later that I probably would be on my way out.
When you were weighing up the chance to go and manage in the Football League or stay at Maidstone and stay around your family, how difficult a decision was it?
Really tough. In hindsight, I should have took it for a career move. It's probably my only chance. Hopefully it won't be, but it's a good chance. It might be my only chance to manage in the Football League. So it was, from a career move, it was a stupid decision. For my kids, it wasn't. I was obviously going through a divorce with my ex-wife. So it, just at the time, my main thing was that I would still see my kids. And that sort of swung it, really. So I don't regret it from that point of view. But a point of view of a career move, yeah, it was certainly. And financially, and having a contract, it was. They offered me a really good deal, and it was a deal I probably should have taken. If I could turn back time, yeah, I would have done it, and I would have made it work with the kids. But you do things at the time that you feel are right, and at the time I felt it was right. I still had, as well, as much as I say about the bad things and the things I wanted at Maidstone, I did love being manager there. I was proud to be manager there, obviously, as a local lad that used to go and watch them as a kid. A lot of friends and family used to come down and watch, and it was a nice, and I enjoyed my time there. But it, as a career move, yeah, I should have probably gone.
On a personal level, Jay, to you touched on it, going through a divorce, leaving a club which has been such a big part of your life, felt like another divorce in a way. You know, that separation, you know, real difficult period for you in your own personal life, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was, and I'm lucky. I got some real good close friends that were there for me. My family have been excellent. So it was tough. It was a big, all of a sudden you go from, sort of being married and stuff, and a solid job that you're used to your daily routine, and it all sort of changes. So it's been a real interesting year, and a year that I've learned a lot from, and I've come out the other side, and I'm probably in a lot happier and better place than I've been in a long time. So you don't realise it at the time. You think, oh, what's going on here? But it's one of those things, and you move on.
Going back to last season, you went 17 games without a win at one point. Probably a lot of clubs would have sacked a manager at that stage. It almost seems strange that you were let go or sacked or mutual consent, however they put it, at the start of this season, as opposed to last season, when probably you couldn't have had that many complaints at that stage.
No, the only complaints I'd have, and I think the reason I probably kept my job, is because I think the club, those inside the club, knew the reasons why we weren't winning games. I've seen a lot of things where people say, oh, he's out of his depth at that level. I think if people knew what sort of how the club was run and stuff, they'd realise that on the field we were probably moved a lot quicker than what the club had off the field, and I still think that's the case. But in that 17 game run, we lost probably the best centre forward in that league, who's now in League One, Joe Piggott, scoring 14-15 goals for AFC Wimbledon. My big gripe there was that I actually agreed Joe Piggott's deal when I was away on holiday. There was no buyout clause agreed by me or anything when I came back, and I was getting calls from AFC Wimbledon and Coventry about Piggott, and they say, oh, he's got I won't say the amount, but a buyout clause, and I don't know how that's been agreed, and it had been agreed while I was away, and things like that disappointed me. And so we lost Joe Piggott. Zavon Hines, probably one of the most talented players when he was fully fit in that league, two players that could win us games. I think Piggs had around 18 goals, Zavon had about 10 goals for us, and we lost them two players. And if you're trying to replace them players mid-season, it's impossible, unless you've got big money to go and sign players, and we didn't have that. So you're replacing them with players that are not of the same level. And where there was games where we should have won, If we'd have had goal scorers, we could. And so you look back, and I'm not blaming it totally on that, but I think any team in the world, if they lose their best sort of set, if they lose both their centre forwards or the lads that are scoring their goals, it's going to affect them, and it affected us. And there was games, I remember all the shot away that was on TV, and we should have won that game, and we didn't at the time. We had pigs then, but there was a lot of games that could have gone either way, and I think if we'd have kept them players, we certainly would have been in a more comfortable position, that's for sure.
How hard is it to find strikers at that level that are going to get those goals?
It's tough at any level. It's sort of to get goal scorers. That's why there's such a. The players get what they get, and they get paid it well. We had Piggott on a very good deal. I got him when at Cambridge he had sort of fallen astray. I spoke to a few people, and they sort of said, "Oh, this and that about him." I'm not sure. And I worked every day with him. I love working with him. His attitude was different class, and he's deserving what he's getting, really. And I think he'll get a move end of the season, deservedly so. And for me, trying to replace that was nigh impossible. I couldn't. I think we brought in Ross Lafayette, who's a good player, not a natural goal scorer. So he gave us a focal point. And then the other was sort of Darius Osa, who we took a gamble on from Oldham, and he was on next to nothing. But that was what we had to do. And when you're looking at that and going, well, Piggs was a natural goal scorer, Zavon was someone that could create goals even if he wasn't scoring them, it becomes tough.
You were in that league with some real big clubs, former Football League clubs. You spoke about it being like an extension of the Football League. Going away to places, was it quite an eye-opener in the way that other clubs did things?
Yeah, it was. You realise then that we were behind other clubs, but it's really tough because you can't pick and choose when you win promotion. And I remember sort of we probably needed a season or two at Conference South to sort of steady the ship after going Ryman South, Ryman Prem, but you can't take that opportunity when it's there. And we, people can say we got lucky in the playoffs because of penalties, whatever. There is luck involved in football, but at the end of the day, we still got to that playoffs. We had an unbelievable season. And that sort of playoff final game summed up what we had. And we took that promotion. And for 2 years, we went 17 games unbeaten. We never dropped in the bottom four. If we'd have kept the players we had, we'd have finished mid-table, if not above, I think, quite comfortably. So for me, where Maidstone were as a club to finish around mid-table, two season running, was a success for a club of where we were on and off the field. So maybe not in support terms. Obviously, people look at the support and go, what a massive club. And in name, it's a massive club. But realistically, we were ahead of schedule. So to finish mid-table in them two seasons, for me, was a success. But obviously, other people saw differently.
It should be remembered how far the club's come since you were appointed permanent manager back in 2011. What were things like back then? You were ground sharing, weren't you?
I think when I first did that, we were ground sharing at Ashford. And I remember Andy Ford at the end of the game, I think we played Kingstone and we lost 1-0. And he, at the end of the game, he came in and he said, I'm done. And as I was walking out to the car park, Bill approached me and said, would you take the game for Saturday? And it kind of went from there. And it was an eye. I mean, training wise, we trained at a school over at sort of Medway. There was hardly any lights. It was almost pull your cars up and put your car lights on. It was that bad, sort of the training facilities. But we had no training kit, so I sort of got sponsorship off of local friends of mine, businesses, to try and get us training kit just to make us a bit more professional. And it was, you realised what a big club it was. And then with regards to the support and in name, you could see that it could be that, it could kick on. It needed the ground, and obviously when I met Terry and Bill and they said, look, the ground's going to happen, it kind of, that was the opportunity. And again, I never thought it would go as well as it did over that quick space of time, but it was an eye-opener. I'd say the first week, I remember going into the office and they said, what's your team for Saturday? And we had Danny Ogden, top goal scorer. And I said, I'll probably start Danny up top because he hadn't been playing for whatever reason under Andy Ford. And then Terry and Bill said, well, no, we've just agreed a deal for a catch announcement. So I was like, okay. And then it was like, we need to free up some budget. And I think I had to release a good friend of mine, James Pinot. And it was like, so it was kind of welcome to the world of management, really. But it was something I enjoyed. And I was still playing at the time, which I found tough. But it was, there were tough times, but enjoyable. And because we had the carrot of knowing the ground was being built, and when you're a local lad and you're seeing it happen, I would pop down there at night and see the different things happening. It was exciting.
When you went in after Andy Ford, you almost kept them up.
Yeah, we did. And when I took over again, the meeting was, look, we are down, or we're looking like we're down. Can you just try and bring some belief back? Because we haven't won at home all season. And we did the same thing. We couldn't sign him. And the deadline was coming up. And I think I signed Adam Birchall on loan from Dartford. and he was the only one we took on loan and brought in, and we had the same squad, but just got them. You could see the boys were down and they weren't, it weren't a good place, and we just got them enjoying their football a bit more belief. I brought Alan Pout in with me, Alan Pout, and he was a good lad, and the boys respected him, and we just got them believing and got them enjoying their football again, enjoying training, and all of a sudden we were, I think we went to Hornchurch last game of the season with a chance of staying up, and in the end, I think we might have gone down a goal difference or a point, and it was sort of a bit gutting, but that was really when I thought, okay, I quite enjoy this management.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, what made you think, yeah, actually I could do this long term? And then obviously that first summer when you're actually appointed manager and you've got to build a squad, I guess, from pretty much from what you're saying, most things were taken away, so you've got to probably build a squad from scratch almost.
I think the game that made me decide that this is a bit of me was Tooting and Mitcham away, and we were losing about 3-1 with about 10 minutes to go, and we ended up winning 4-3, sorry. And it was just that game. I hadn't played. I'd been playing, and I didn't play that game. And I thought, I still had that buzz. And then, yeah, it went on, really. And then in the summer, when they offered it permanently, I sort of took it. And that was an eye-opener. Doing the first full season was an eye-opener. We brought some good lads in, Sean Welfords and people like that. And we had some good characters around it. And we sort of missed out on playoffs. And then obviously, we had the next year at... back at the Gallagher, and it went from there, really, and the rest is its history, I guess.
What were the expectations once you were at the Gallagher? Was it that you had to go up that season?
It wasn't. They never put that pressure on me. I don't remember them saying there was. They might have done in the first season, but it was just common knowledge. We were the biggest club in that league, Ryman South. There was no doubt about it. You could see that teams come and they raise their game. But again, I think the real challenges were Dulwich, who won it. We could have won the league. We messed up against Faversham. I think Darren Ebrown made a mistake. He'd probably kill me to say that, but he made a mistake. And if we'd have won that game, I think we'd have gone and won it, and we lost the league by a point. But then went on, and to be honest, promotion-wise, in that first season, having the playoff the way they worked then, and you had the home team in the final, and that was us, the highest placed, and that was us, and it went well. And on the final day, it was we won quite comfortably against Faversham, and it was a real good end to the season. So the pressure was, I think, from myself, and the players felt it, because you knew you were the biggest club and everyone expected you to go up, and it's football doesn't work like that.
What was it like being in a title race with the two teams, you know, you yourselves and Dulwich, and being the manager at that time?
Yeah, it's a different sort of pressure. As a player, like I say, I don't think you feel it as much as a player, because you walk away a little bit and you forget things, but as a manager, yeah, you know the pressures everyone's expecting. And we made a big call. I always remember the semi-final, we had Folkestone. And to be fair, Folkestone first half were the better side. They were sort of causing us problems. And that young Johan Terhorst up there causing a few problems. Charlie Mitten made an unbelievable save. And it always reminds me of Charlie Mitten, who was a good friend of mine. Before the semi-final, we come out and he had a towel over his head. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I've got a really bad migraine, so I'm seeing spots everywhere." And I was like, "What?" He said, "I don't know if I'm going to be able to play." And he went and played, he made an unbelievable save, and that was Charlie. He was so relaxed about things, and he made an unbelievable save. And then we brought Boovy on, and I remember to add Olerunda off, who had been excellent for us, and we had some good forwards then. I remember the crowd booing a little bit at taking Addy off, and Boovy with his first touch. Boovy did what Paul Booth always did, scored goals, and he had an unbelievable finish. And we went from there, and that was on, and it was... That point, I kind of thought, yeah, we're going to do this. I was glad we didn't win the league, but as I say, the playoffs was a good way of going up.
You mentioned some of the names there, and they're all great players in their own right. How did you cope, Jay, moving those players on the other side of management when you're, you know, good friends with a lot of them, but the day does come when you have to say your time's up?
It's tough to start with, and I think what helped me was the fact that when I went in there, I sort of the first week in, I had to release a couple, and you kind of... You realise it's part and parcel of it. And I think players understand they're disappointed. But you're right, like people like Paul Booth are really good friends of mine, still are. And so when you come to that point and you have to sort of have that conversation, it's not nice. I think majority of players understand. And I think that's why I've still got a good relationship with the majority of players that have played for me. And they normally say good things, which is nice. And especially if you've had success. If you're winning things and you're releasing players, it's tougher because... They can almost say, "Well, what have I not done?" And I look back at people like Sonny Miles when we won the Ryman Prem. We had like an unbelievable defensive record. I thought at the time it was a right thing to move on. Steve Watt caused a massive sort of commotion when we got rid of him because he was club captain. And as I said, what, he came back as my assistant, and he's someone I speak to all the time and a mate. And it's, but they were decisions that you kind of have to make. You live and die by them, and I felt at the time they were the right decisions, and I was fortunate. 9 times out of 10, they did turn out all right. There's been others that have got away that you think, I made a mistake there, but that's football, and it's never nice telling someone that you're going to move them on. But at the same time, I think what I've always done is try to be honest with players, so they know if they've not done it, they know if they've done it. I'm always, they can ask me, and I'm quite approachable, and I think that's kind of helped.
Is it important that your judgment isn't clouded by that friendship as well?
Massively. Yeah, I think as it went on, I tried to stay away from signing mates because, it becomes tough, especially when you see a lot of them outside of football. It is tough. So, and the higher up we went, there was less of them to have to worry about signing. So, but it was, you have to be careful. And I've been one that I don't necessarily have favourites. And I'm like it now, if players are good enough, I don't care how old they are, what experience they've got, then I'll play them. And that was, if you look over the years, we've had some players that fans might have always agreed with. Like Dan Sweeney's one. Dan Sweeney, most Dan supporters seem to hate, but he's now been unbelievable for Barnet this season. I think he's not far off getting a move soon. And there's been many other players that supporters have maybe not seen why I picked them. Jay May was another one at Maidstone who supporters seemed not to like, but he was our top goal scorer 2 years running, and I knew what he offered the team. So, you're never going to please everyone, but you just have to make what you feel is the right decision. And I've always been the same. I mean, if you look back at that playoff final, I left Sean Welford out of the squad completely, who was club captain, and I left Tommy Osborne out of the squad completely, and he was vice captain. And I remember telling them on the day they weren't in the squad for a playoff final, and that was one of the toughest things I had to do, to be honest. And looking back, if I could change it, I would change that. There are two players that I would have put in that squad, because they deserved to over the course of the season. But on the day, I made that decision because I thought it was right that Ian Draycott, we played him because I thought we'd have an effect against Faversham. Adi Olerunda, I felt, deserved to start. And Dan Stubbs had been excellent at right back, so I left him there, and that meant I had to leave Tommy out of the squad. And they're two people that I have a lot of time and respect for, and if I could turn back time, I suppose them two I would include.
Do you make those big calls because during your playing days, for example, you saw managers make big decisions then and you think, yep, you can do that as a manager? Or is it literally, like you say, you just do it on the gut? What you think, you know, your gut instinct for that game, you think this player will be better than the other player?
Yeah, totally. I remember on the day telling Steve Ward and John Brooks, who were with me in the coaching team then, and they both were like a bit shocked, I think. But I've always been one that I'll make decisions. If I'm going to manage, I want to make decisions, and if they're wrong, I want to be sort of held responsible for it. I can't turn around and go, well, I was influenced and I did this because so-and-so said I should have done this. I'll make that decision. If it's wrong, it's wrong, and I'll live by that. And I've got no one to blame then. And so that was decisions that I made on the day. I felt that was right to win us them games, and it proved right. I mean, it was hard leaving Bouvier out that day. He'd scored the winner in the semi-final, and I left him on the bench, and I think he got 10-15 minutes at the end. And so they were tough decisions, but as I say, at the time they turned out right, so it makes me look all right.
When you make those decisions, can you remember any players throwing the tantrums and having a go at you? Is it, you know, you've got a game to win after all, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm sure if you don't win it, then I think that's when it'll happen. And I would have got some stick, no doubt about it. I remember I signed Stuart King from Folkestone at the time, and he didn't work out for us. He scored a couple of goals and nice enough lad, but he just didn't fit in with the squad. And I think he'd admit that. He wasn't as comfortable as he was at Folkestone. And that's what I say. So I left sort of the likes of Sean out for someone like Stuart. I hadn't been there long, but I felt it was the right decision at the time. I had to look and think, well, who might get me a goal if we're chasing? And I felt he was the right decision. But it's all decisions you make. They're tough decisions, and I'm sure many managers will tell you, you have to make them decisions, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't.
And managers, I guess, need broad shoulders. I mean, just thinking, you know, a bit further along the line there, if you're a manager on the touchline, presumably you've got to have that stillness about you almost, where you're going to have fans behind you giving you some stick about what decisions you're making during a game, or making substitutions, or why have you picked that centre forward. Can you remember times when people are giving you some abuse from behind?
I've had plenty at the Gallagher, yeah. I did. I remember the year we won the Ryman Prem, I think it was the Bank Holiday Monday, about 3-4 games into the season, and we played away at Tunbridge, and I had a Maidstone supporter come behind the dugout and he called me some of the worst names I think I've ever been called. And that was a Maidstone supporter, and telling me I should be sacked and everything. And we went on to win the league, obviously, and we had the cup run against Stevenage, and I reminded him of what he said to me last game of the season when we lifted the trophy at the Gallagher. I sort of didn't forget his face, so when he came over to shake me hand, I just kind of politely reminded him of what he'd said to me. But you get it in football, and I had people walk behind a dugout many times at Maidstone and get stick. I remember being booed off when we got promoted in the Conference South, we got booed off at home. But that's part and parcel of it. I've got no issue. I walked around Maidstone. I was living in Bearstead, so you'd walk about and you'd see supporters all the time. And I'd be in the local co-op and I'd get someone going, "Oh, crap, yesterday, this was rubbish, you should have done this." And that's opinions. Football's all about opinions. I've got no issue with that. And in general, supporters of Maidstone were very good to me, and they've been good to me at Margate. I think I got more stick as a player. I used to get plenty of stick, especially at Tunbridge. I seem to always get stick when I played against them there or managed against them. So, but yeah, it's part and parcel. I mean, you do have to have broad shoulders. If you take that personally and you can't deal with that, I think then you're struggling the game, definitely.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
You've often spoken about the importance of having a good changing room, not just good players, technically. For people who haven't played the game and been within those four walls, what does it actually look like, you know, to have a good atmosphere in there?
It's hard to describe. I think I first experienced it at Margate. When I first went down there, I left Gillingham, and a good mate of mine, who's now at Soccer Elite, Lee Spiller, he sort of spoke Chris Kinnear, and I went down. I went down as a right wing back, because I played a 3-5-2, and I went down as a right wing back somehow. And I walked in the train. I just remember, and you had the likes of Ian O'Connell, Bill Edwards, Tony Dixon at the time, Elliot Martin, people like that, who were real characters. And it was the first time I thought, yeah, I feel real part of this. Obviously, you go from being a YT at Gillingham and you're sort of a bit part all the time, you're used when you're needed, a sort of thing. And all of a sudden, you feel part of it, and you can't. And when you're winning games, you just, I don't know, you all trust each other. You sort of, you believe in each other, and you're willing to fight for everything. And that was how it made you feel. And it was always something I took away, and I just caught a thought if I ever go into it, and that was probably what I did when I first went at Mesa. As I say, it was really down, and we just got everyone together and got everyone enjoying it. And I think you get an extra 10-20% out of people. There's a fine line of going over the mark and stepping over the mark, and you have to manage it right, I think. And I think I've been fortunate. I've sort of had a knack of being able to do that and keep things under control at the same time enjoying it. And I think you look, when we won the Ryman Prem, the dressing we had then was unbelievable. It was, I always remember Graham Wesley saying after we beat him, I remember him walking in and they were doing interviews and we had the change rooms doors open and a Club Tropicana or something like that was playing with Franny Collins on a bench dancing and singing and Lee Worgan and things like that. And I remember all the Stevenage players walking in and looking and thinking, what the hell's going on here? But, and then they were trying to do the interviews after the game, and I remember I walked past and Graham Wesley said, that's why they've beat us, that dressing room in there, listen to them, and the music was playing and that. And it's worth a lot of points a season. You have to get it right, as I say, and we had it the first year when we signed Piggott Late, Stuart Lewis, that dressing room at the end of that season, the Reese Prestiges, Lee Worgans, we had some big characters, the Seth Nana, all good lads, and they all just bought into it. And you just get that buzz when you walk into a change room and you know that they believe in each other and want to be there, and that's the biggest thing, really.
Because we're not talking about a load of people being nice to each other and giving each other a pat on the back. There has to be that sort of element of an edge, doesn't there?
Oh, totally, totally. Some of the stuff that's said and done. But what I think is a big thing is you say them bits, and I was brought up like that. I mean, in football, you say your bits, you have your arguments, you go in the bar afterwards, you have a beer together, and it's forgotten, and I think that's important. And that's how it has to be, and in general it is. And I think it's about knowing the club as well. Like I knew what we were at Maidstone. I knew we were sort of the two seasons we stayed in the National League. I knew how we were run. I knew what he needed. I knew everyone at the club. I used to run the soccer schools. I used to know all the kids. I knew everyone there, and I knew how it had to work. And I think obviously the person that come in after me tried to rip that out. When you're losing big players like Stuart Lewis, Lee Worgans and that, Seth Nana Tomasi, people like that out your changing room, you're going to miss them. You may not think it at the time, and I get why he did it. He wanted to sort anyone that had an allegiance to me, probably wanted them out, but probably the worst thing he could have done, really, because I think I'm confident if we'd have had the squad and the dressing room we had at the start of the season, we've added one or two, a good centre forward, an experienced centre half, and probably one more midfielder, three players, I think we would have finished quite comfortably in that league. But he came in and tore it apart, and that's a shame.
What was that like for you watching on as Harry Wheeler was making all those changes and saying what he said about the squad he'd inherited?
It was crazy, really. It was silly. At the start of the season, we're beating Dagenham, we're putting in some half-decent performances. The results weren't quite right, but I knew we were sort of one or two players short. But we had sort of gone with very young, and it was, I think we had three players over the age of 24, and that was the club we'd sort of wanting to go that route. And then, I felt a bit insulted when I saw the interview, obviously, with Terry saying that he'd done the decision to give the club, give the supporters hope. I thought that was a bit of an insult. And then a bigger insult was obviously who they appointed afterwards, because I think when we had the meeting, it was kind of said that they wanted to get the experience of someone who really knows the league. And then I sort of raised an eyebrow on it. And listen, I didn't want them to struggle. I'm absolutely gutted they've gone down, because I've put in a lot of hard work there over the years. Me and Nicky Southall spoke about it the weekend, and Nicky said to me, all sort of our hard work's been undone, and it does feel that way. I think if they'd have appointed Hakan and John when I left, then I don't think they'd be in the position they are. But certainly I'm not putting it all on the lad's shoulders, but I think obviously it was a big ask for him, and to go in and make the changes he did, it was obviously the wrong decision.
How confident were you that if you'd stayed in charge for the whole of this season, you would have stayed up?
You can't ever say for definite, but I'm quite confident. As I said earlier, I'm confident in my ability, and I knew the club, I knew what we were about. I knew we needed a real good centre forward. It was tough for me. It was the first year I wasn't in charge of the budget as well. Budget got left to someone else to agree wages with players and that, which was the first time for me, which I found hard to deal with, because I felt there was some things that got agreed that maybe I wouldn't have. But the club chose to go a certain way, and it hasn't worked out. And I, like I say, I'm gutted for everyone at the club. And even though, like I say, I've not left on the best of terms with some people at the club, I'm gutted for them as well, because they put a lot of money in, and I hope they get back to that level, because it is, as I say, when it comes to support and when it comes to naming a club, it's a big club. I don't think off the field it was ready for that level yet, and that's my honest opinion. But I hope they get back to that level sooner rather than later for the sake of the supporters.
When you talk earlier about not being on a contract as the manager yourself, not having a goalkeeping coach, that kind of infrastructure not being in place, how far away do you think that actually was going to be further down the line with Maidstone, in your vision of Jay Saunders being manager?
I just felt we needed this year to sort of build. We'd spoke for years about getting a scouting network sorted. It never kind of happened. So all the players and we signed some good players, and some players moved on. We sold some good players. Was all down to us going out and watching games. Me and Nicky, who was like, we had to go and do the groundwork and the footwork and really find them players. Did we get them all right? No, but we got a good few right that have gone on and are having good careers. I felt we needed the goalkeeping coach, was the important side of it. Lee Morgan was playing and training himself, which is not ideal. You see most clubs at that level have to track invest. There's a lot that goes into it. And I just felt we needed to do that and build that side of it. And it doesn't seem a lot. And don't get me wrong, it all costs money. But at that level, it's a standard for clubs, really. And the staff they have and everything. That was going back to the academy stuff. I just felt I enjoyed the academy stuff, but I needed to step away from it, I think, at that level. And that kind of disappointed me, because I don't think, certainly Harry Wheeler, when he went in there, that wasn't doing the academy. I don't think Hakan and John are now. And it was kind of a big thing that I had to do. And at that level, you it's tough to do. I know there's a couple of managers, well, one at Boreham Wood that do the academy. I know he finds it tough, and it is. It takes up a lot of time and effort, and that league's a full-time professional league, and you need to be really putting your time into that side of it.
You mentioned earlier that you obviously spent some time at Bromley in between leaving Maidstone and going into Margate now. How much did you learn, and did you see the difference that maybe Bromley are further down the line than Maidstone?
Yeah, I think first of all, I've got to thank Neil Smith, really. He was one of the first people who rang me up. He said, look, come and have a cup of tea with me. And I went up to a training ground, and he said, look, do you want to come in and help us out for the time being and be involved? And I'll never forget that for Smudge, because at the time I was sort of a bit like, what do I do for a bit? And they're brilliant down there. That sort of ammo. Alan Dunn, who I loved working with. Alan Dunn's someone that I'm really impressed with, and I think he's got a big future in the coaching side of it. Jim Stannard, the one from the Gillingham days, again, another top bloke. Jerry Dolt, the owner's down there. And I sort of went in there, and Smudge went to me, oh, there's a few things we need to get sorted and that, and sort of off the field and that. And I walked in and I thought, Jesus, like, you are a long way in front of us. They had sort of Hugo Langton come in doing a sort of video analysis with the players before games, which we never had at Maidstone. There was just so much. The food, the everything they had there was just professional. The training pitches at the back. And I just thought, yeah, it made me realise that they're doing things in the right way and they're building it right. And he's a very good manager, and I'm pleased they're sort of they've pushed up the league a little bit, and I hope they kick on again next season. I think they're a club that will. I think they'll keep building. And but as I say, I'm really grateful for what they did for me there.
What's it been like for you this season? Then you touched on it earlier, Maidstone, at the wrong end of the table throughout. But were people contacting you when another player was released from Maidstone and left there? I mean, how was it for the old manager? I mean, you're in a unique position, I guess.
Yeah, it was. I got a lot of contacts about players there, and should I take him? What do you think of this lad? And it was really tough because you're local town as well. So it weren't like I was at Macclesfield and I come back down here and I didn't read the local paper. It's sort of everywhere I went, you're picking up the paper and it's about Maidstone. Everything, people tweeting you, people. And I'm gutted. I really am that they got relegated. I know I've had a lot of people go to me, oh, like, you must love it, the fact, and it looks good on you. But I'm gutted. It's my local club. My kids still go down there. And it's a shame. But it was... It's been weird. I honestly thought when Hakan and John went in there and they could maybe turn it around, it's probably a little bit too late for them, and I'm confident with them too, that they'll have a good season next year and, like I say, hopefully get back to that level.
Between 2012 and 2016, you had an unbelievable time at Maidstone, 3 promotions in 4 seasons. Which moments or games or which one of those promotions really sort of stands in your mind as a highlight?
It's a weird... From a personal point of view, I suppose the Ryman Prem, because it was... the first league I'd won. So obviously we won the playoffs, but to actually win your first league when you're the best team in that league over the course of 40 games or whatever it is, and we had the FA Cup run with a Stevenage game. So from a personal point of view, I would say that will always stand out because it's my first league I've ever won, and as it stands, my only league I've ever won. But I think the playoff final, just for the emotions, going through every emotion on the day, is something that will live with me for a long time, really. And I think for a lot of people would say the same. I think a lot of players that are involved in that would say the same. And like I said, we had a great group of lads, and it was something that I felt, to go back-to-back promotions was an unbelievable achievement.
I think for us guys in the press box, it was a game that you never forget because of the way the game went, what it meant, the derby, the rivalry, the end of extra time, the penalties. Just talk us through the day, your memories of that game at Ebbsfleet.
It was a weird one because we played Truro over 2 legs and we won it quite comfortably, and I think it's 3-0 overall. And I remember being in the bar and everyone was going, oh, I hope we get, was it Chelm? Who did Ebbsfleet lose to in the beat in the semis? They beat Whitehawk. And everyone in the bar was going, I hope Whitehawk win. And I was in the bar thinking, I really don't, because I thought Whitehawk were a very, very good team. And I didn't fancy them. We hadn't picked up a point against them. The 2 games we played them, so I was kind of voting for Ebbsfleet, and obviously they won on penalties, and I just felt from that point that we had a chance. So all the build up in that week was really positive. It was kind of let's go and enjoy it. And on the day of the game, I remember getting a call from someone at the club and saying, look, we don't go up, it's not a major problem, we've had a good season. I was thinking, no, we're here, and it made me want to win the game more. And obviously we knew what a big game it was. I think Ebbsfleet really fancied their chances, and Darryl had a lot of pressure on him. I feel for Darryl because he had a lot of pressure on him, and obviously it was publicised, the money they were paying, everything, and we were the opposite. I was sat with Nicky Southall before the game in the dugout, and we were just confirming everything, and sort of about 4 of their players walked out, and I looked and I thought, if rumours are true, that's probably our budget on them 4 players. I mean, we had players playing that day, we were probably on about £200 sort of thing, some of our players. And we went into the game, and I just went in before the game, and I just said to the boys, there's absolutely no pressure on us today in respect of, you've been unbelievable for me this season, you've done everything I've asked of you, you've got to this point, go and do it for yourselves, just go out there and enjoy it, do it for yourself, but there's no pressure on you. And I just tried to take all the pressure off them. I said, look, if we lose, I'll take the stick or whatever we get, but there's no pressure on you boys. And you'd have to speak to some of the players that they might, I like to think it worked. And we went out and we started the game really well. And Ashmore made a couple of good saves. And I thought, OK. When the lineup came in, Matty Godden was on the left. And I thought, I couldn't believe my luck, to be fair, because he was probably the best centre-forward in that league. And they had Tom Bonner at right-back. And I fancied Bobby against Tom Bonner. So we'd worked, if Tom Bonner played there, we'd worked at getting the ball out to Bobby as quick as we could. And we started the game really well. And then, obviously, they went 1-0 up through a handball. Penalty Manny Parry, which Stu Lewis always reminds me that he won the penalty, won both penalties, I think, and they scored, and you think, okay, and then we got back into it, obviously a great goal by Bobby just after half-time. It's about half-time, getting the ball, He took his goal, unbelievable, Bobby. And I always question Bobby's quality at times, his final end product. And that day, obviously, he come up trumps for us. And then, yeah, extra time, and it was sort of going nowhere. They got the penalty, and you do think you're out. And we gambled. We took Rojo off. James Rojo put Dan Sweeney on and brought Jack Paxman on, and obviously Didi, and we just got on the ball and started playing. You could see the pressure. I could see the pressure getting to him. I could see Darryl on the sideline. You could and Gritty and that. You could see how you could feel the tension, and you could see them dropping deeper and deeper.
And the atmosphere around the ground.
Oh, yeah. It kind of, you could see our supporters almost sucking the ball in the net. And they were getting deeper and deeper. And I know as a manager, there's nothing worse when you hang on in a game. You wanted your players to get up the field, and they weren't. They were sitting deep. And we kept passing. And it was the first time I felt a bit agitated. Like, I'd enjoyed the whole day. I was even losing 2-1. I'm sitting there thinking, what a great game to be involved in. The crowd. I was getting abuse from the absolute fans behind me, dugout. And I think this is brilliant. I was actually enjoying it. And then, yeah, the ball came in the box, and we're screaming at them to get in the box. The ball came in the box. I think Dan Sweeney had a swing at it and missed it completely, thank God. And it felt a DD, and I don't know how they didn't clear the ball. It just kind of, I think, was meant to be. And then, yeah, then the penalties. And I remember Darryl didn't watch them. He walked in the change room, and I stood there, and Alex O'Crofie said, "What do you think?" I said, we're going to win this. I said, we're going to win it now. We're going to win the penalties. And
did you have your five picked before the game, or did you ask for volunteers?
No, we didn't. We practiced them briefly on the train on the Thursday. And when I went out there, I sort of said to the boys, right, who wants them? And it was all set up. I remember Fisher said, yeah. Dan Sweeney said, yeah. Paxman said, yeah. I went, Joe Ely. He was like, oh, no, my car's a bit tight. All the older players kind of backed off. And I was like, oh, come on, don't do this to me. And Bobby said, yeah. So we had all the young lads, really, if you're looking at it. I thought, fair play. And they stepped out and they took unbelievable penalties. And Jack Paxman as well. And I thought, yeah. And I just remember, as I said, Alex Crofie. And then Keds stepped up. And I've got a lot of time for Keds. Keds has been an unbelievable player and still is an unbelievable player. And he's a great lad. He stepped up, and Alex Crofie went to me, what do you think? And I said, Wargs will say, you won't beat him 3 times. Because I'd seen Wargs in training saving penalties. And I just had a gut feeling that you don't beat Wargs 3 times from penalties, and I think the pressure maybe got to Keds a little bit, maybe not, I'm not sure. He probably went with what most people would do in that pressure situation, that was to go power down the middle, and Wargs saved it. And then the rest was a bit weird, because all the bench sprinted, and my instant reaction was to go and see Darryl on that. So I didn't celebrate. I walked straight over to Darryl. Darryl wasn't there because he was in the change room. He come out, I give Darryl a cuddle and said, look, you know what I mean, I'm sorry, because we'd scored it late on, and I felt like, and then shook the rest of their bench out, and then I went and saw my dad and the kids, and I didn't really get a chance to celebrate. I remember Peter Varney coming over and giving me a couple of bottles of champagne. By the time I got in the change room after doing all the interviews, everyone had gone. And that's the one thing I regret, is every promotion we had, I missed all the celebrations in the change room doing interviews. If I could go back, I probably would have gone in, celebrated and come back out. But it was a day that it was just unbelievable. And then we all went back to the club and had a good drink and went out that night, and I flew off to Spain with the academy the next morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, feeling very worse for wear, I must admit.
Was that up there with the best days you've had in the game?
I think so. Yeah, I don't think many will ever beat that. Just because it had every emotion and everything that could go on in a game. Last second goals, penalties, penalty shootout. It just had everything, and a local derby as well. And it was just an unbelievable feeling, and one that, yeah, will live with me for a long time.
And you had some players in that side who had kind of come up through the Ryman League with you and stayed with you into the National League. I'm interested, someone like Alex Fisher, probably not your sort of textbook footballer in a sense, but someone who did extremely well for you at different levels. How did you go about getting as much out of him as you did?
Fisher is one I'm gutted for. When he got injured, we had a lot of clubs ringing about him. There was a lot of clubs ringing about him in the pro game that I think that season he would have gone. He had 16 goals, I think, at Christmas in the Ryman Prem, playing from left wing. What Fisher was, did he lack quality at times? Yeah, he did. But his effort and his commitment and his work rate were phenomenal. And you'd have him in your team any day of the week. Even now, when he's not fully fit, since I've gone to Margate, he came in for them 5 games. He can be unplayable. And then you've got the opposite in Millsy, who's the most laid-back fellow ever. I don't think I've spoke to him since I've known him. But just a great lad. And their lads, it must have been great for them. Because, I mean, Fisher made his debut. I was playing at Maidstone when he came on at Hendon or Hampton away. It's Harry Borough we played, and he came on last 10 minutes. I remember seeing this kid coming off, and who's this? And he ran about like a lunatic. And then I remember Millsy, the season I took over from Andy Ford, I was playing, and he'd been left out of the squad. And I said to him, like, what are you doing? He said, oh, I think I'm going to be gone. And I said, look, just bide your time, see how things go. You never know, what football's a funny game. And then a week later, I took over, and he went straight and took Ronan Marsh-Brown out, put him in at left-back, and he played every game since. And for lads like that, local lads coming up through and doing the promotions we did, it must have been great for them, and they're great lads. And still, as I say, Millsy should be playing higher than he is, and Alex Fisher, if he was fully fit, would be playing higher than he is, no doubt.
And never took himself that seriously in this age of kind of sports science, and it's all about fitness and eating the right things. He would openly say, you know, I like a burger, I like a takeaway, and he'd take a bit of stick, and it was all in good humour. But that was him, you know, and you took him as the person and the player that he was, and you didn't try and change him.
No, you didn't. I think Flish, if he'd have gone on to the higher level and stayed, if he hadn't had his injury, I think he would have gone into the programme and that would have changed. But he didn't get that chance. And then obviously, but Flish is Flish, and like I say, he's a great player, he's a great lad. And I hope his knee stays right so that he can go on playing, because he's certainly a very, very good player when he's fit.
How close did they come to pro clubs, the pair of them? I mean, did you actually get bids in, you say, about interest?
I remember sitting with Mills in his office. Charlton asked him to go out there on trial, and we brought him in the office, and he sat with his dad, and we said, look, Charlton want to take you on trial. Me and Bill Williams were sat there, and his dad went, oh, it's brilliant, like that. And Millsy went, well, how am I going to get there? He said, I live on the Isle of Sheppey. And we're like, well, don't worry about that. We'll make sure you get it. He's just so laid back. And he went out, he did a week's training, and said, no, it's not for me. I don't really like it. And I think there was a lot of clubs. He was just happy to be at the club. I think he enjoyed it. And it was when we went daytime training, we couldn't agree a deal with him. And I was gutted, to be honest. We tried everything, couldn't. And same with Flish. Flish had a lot of interest. We never had firm bibs, but there was, I think it was a matter of time before we did. And unfortunately, he did his, I think it was Bournemouth were showing a little bit of interest at the time. And then the week after, he did his knee against Bognar, and in a tackle, which is a shame, because he's a player that would have gone on and played higher, no doubt about it.
When and where do you think you played your best football?
As a player? It's a tough one, because I had good promotions with Margate, and I really enjoyed that time, and I think there was a couple of times I nearly moved on, and it never quite happened for me. But a season I really enjoyed was at Gravesend, I should say. When I first went down to Andy Ford, I got, I think, nearly 18 goals or 18 goals. I still got my top scorer award from the club. And I think I won players' player, manager's player. I got everything that year, and that was a really good season for me, on a personal note. And Liam Daish came in at the end of that. I had some really good years at Margate. I played nearly 400 games for him. I played a lot of managers. We had promotions, FA Cup runs. So it's a tough one, but that season at Gravesend certainly stands out for me.
And among those big characters that you played with at Margate, you talked about going into the dressing room and seeing the likes of, you know, Ian O'Connell there. I think I'm right in saying there was a game when you played for Margate, Phil Collins was on the opposite side, and him and Ian O'Connell had a big flare-up or a fight. let's not beat around the bush, and there was a red card or two, and then Chris Kinnear went out and signed Phil Collins, so he brought him into the same side as Ian. How did that go?
I'm sure I played in that game, but I remember it because I'm sure Ian and Phil were like almost biting each other on the sideline, but it was all right. Phil, that was what I mean with dressing rooms. They'd come in, and Phil felt part of it straight away, and he had a great season. I remember having a row with Phil, and it made the press up, because me and him had a massive row at a game at Margate, but it was just forgotten. And that was what you had. You had men in that team, you were real men. I mean, I was one of the youngest, but it made me grow up, and it made me realise what you needed. And they were honest lads. They all cared. We had Leon Braithwaite, Phil Collins up top, great players. I played in midfield with Elliot Martin and Mark Monday. Great players. You had the likes of Paul Lamb. They were just lads that, Lee Williams, just lads that loved their football, but also really cared about each other. And Phil came into that, and it was all fine. And he just bought into it. He went on and scored a lot of goals that season. We got promoted. We beat Burton when Nigel Clough was manager. We beat them to the league title. And they were really good times, and really enjoyable times. Times when you look back, and certainly when people say football's changed and the game's gone a bit, football has changed with characters and what can be said. Some of the things that were said to each other after games now, you certainly don't hear it as much now.
Do you think because players now take it more personally and they're not able to separate what happens on the pitch and then what happens when you're in the bar or you go home?
Yeah, and I think a lot of academies have got a lot to answer for, these pro clubs now, that players are very much given so much at a young age, whereas when I was a YT at Jules, we painted stands, we cleaned boots, we did whatever we had to do, the jobs, and now it's kind of, it's all treated nicey-nicey, so when they come in, they're not spoken to how we were. I remember being at Gillingham and one of my managers having me by the throat in the change room, like, and I was a young kid, but it was what went on in football, and it made you grow up. And lads like that, what I loved was when, as I say, when I came in the first day, they just made you feel part of it. They just made you feel part of it, and it didn't matter how old you were; you were one of the lads, and you, as long as you worked hard and done your bit. And I think that's what I was as a player. Was I technically the best player in the world, or was I the most gifted footballer? I wasn't, but I always gave 100%, and I could head a ball. So I mean, that's what I was known for. But yeah, they were good times.
And when you were in charge at Maidstone, you did a long trip up to Gateshead, and I'm not quite sure how it happened, but you ended up on some party bus.
So we won the game, and we're getting the bus back. And we're waiting outside the ground. This party bus pulled up. We were pole dancing thing in it and everything. And so we're sitting there thinking that it's not for us. So we're eating our chicken and chips, waiting for the coach. And this lady comes home and she said, "Oh, your coach broke down. This is your bus back to the station." And we get on and there's flashy, whack the music, like flashing lights. All the boys were loving it. But I was just pleased we won. If we had lost, I would have probably made them walk back to the station. But it was bizarre. I think it made BBC News and everything. But It was a funny situation. Some of the boys, I think, enjoyed it a bit more than the others, the likes of Paxman and that, and people like that. But they were good times, and we had a good squad. We had a good group of lads then that things like that you could enjoy.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
One of the things that interests me about your move, and we do talk about it from time to time amongst ourselves, is when you're in charge at Maidstone for that period of time, you've got the ambition to be a Football League manager. At what point in yourself are you thinking, I need to go into the Football League, or I need to put myself up for those jobs? And you say Macclesfield in the summer was much publicised. Was that the only time that it came along at that point?
I think so. I've kind of been one of them. Maybe I should have put myself out there a little bit more than it is. I've never really had agents. I've just kind of always done my own thing. And I was at a club at Maidstone where things were going well, and I enjoyed being there, and I kind of went along with it. That was the first one I'd heard of. Whether there was interest, I don't know. When I left there was a few clubs got in contact, but nothing was concrete. To be fair, Macclesfield contacted me again just before they took Sol Campbell on. They made contact. The owner said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm at Bromley." And he said, "Would you still be interested?" I said, "Yeah, I'd have a chat with you." And he said, "Look, I'm going to be honest, we're interviewing someone tonight. And depending on what happens with that, we'll go from there. But you were our first choice, so we'll still consider you." And then obviously the next day he rang and just said, "Look, we're giving it to Sol Campbell." And so when you're sort of talking the names of internationals, I know he hadn't managed, but the contacts they got, I kind of thought, well, that's fair enough. And it would have been tough, I suppose, for them to give me a job, having sort of turned them down in the summer and then got the sack from a National League club. So for me, it was an opportunity. But there was a few other offers, but nothing concrete and nothing that sort of ever really come to anything. So it was just a case of getting on and waiting for something too. And it's a difficult one. I think when you've never played Football League either, for managers to get chances. If you look at the Cowley brothers, Danny and Nicky, who I know well, they did the right thing. They left Concord, obviously, when Braintree came up. Braintree had a good season there, and then the Lincoln job came up, and they took it, and they moved it on. And in hindsight, I probably should have tried to follow that path. But hindsight's a wonderful thing.
It's a precarious job, though, isn't it? Football League management, and you say you didn't take the Macclesfield job, but within months they've already changed the manager again. If you did go, then what's to say that it wouldn't have turned out that way for you as well?
Oh, you don't know. That's management. It was hard to get my head round, I must admit, when you sort of agreed to take over at a League Two club, and then 5 months later, you're, no disrespect, but you're managing a Bostic Prem, and you think, oh, kind of, where did this come about? But like I say, in football, you and management, you make your decisions, you live and die by them, and it is what it is. I'm a big believer in that. There's no point in dwelling on it. I'm fully enjoying my time back managing. Who knows where I'll go sort of next. If I'm at Margate, I'm at Margate. If not, then we'll see what comes up. But it's easy to look back and go, I should have done this, I should have done that. But at the time, yeah, should I have taken it? Yeah, I should have took the job. But it is what it is.
It's interesting you say that, because my opinion from the outside is that he shouldn't have taken the job, and that for me, I thought, not knowing what was going on behind the scenes at Maidstone, but maybe if you'd carried on that progression, shall we say, on the field at Maidstone, that a bigger job than Macclesfield might have come along further down the line.
It might have. It might have, and it's all ifs and buts. And it's, there's a lot of managers out there that I think could be managing at a higher level, definitely. And there's some good managers out of work. So you sort of, when the jobs come about, you're lucky if you get it. I think what frustrates me is there's a lot of young, talented managers out there, and you see managers, the same managers, getting the same jobs. And that frustrates me, people not giving a chance. And when I was out of it, I probably should have got myself a CV done. I probably should have stuck myself in for a few jobs that were coming available, but that's not me. And I probably should have been more like that. But it's not. And there's other managers that do that, and that's probably why they keep ending up with the jobs.
Gillingham was regularly an available job. Your name was often linked with it. Was that people 2 and 2 and making 5, or was there anything ever in that?
Probably. I think it's a lot of, obviously, being a local manager, and I was there years ago, but no, there was nothing concrete in it. There was rumours and there was different things, I believe, from people I told, that sort of the owners had asked about me to different people that knew me and had worked with me. So, but nothing ever concrete was put there. And so, as I say, yeah, it was just one of them, really, that you hear things, but nothing come of it.
Do you think you will be Margate's manager next season?
I've no idea, if I'm honest with you. I keep getting asked it, and I had a meeting with a director at the club a few weeks back, and I just sort of said, look, let's get to the end of the season, make sure we're safe, which we are now. I believe the owner, obviously the Russian, Eugene's over Saturday. They'd like to have a chat with me then. I make no bones about it. I'd like to manage at a higher level if I can. But at the same time, if we can agree something and the project and the vision is right, then I'd have no issue staying there, and I'd enjoy it. But it's got to be right off the field. One thing that interested me the most, I think, if we'd have been ground sharing for another year or two at Ashford or Sittingbourne, would I have done it? I probably wouldn't have at the time, because we didn't have training facilities. It was tough. And I just think I need to know at Margate that all them plans are in place and it's going the right way. It's easy for people to say, oh, it's going to happen there and the ground's going to happen and this is going to happen. But obviously I was there 20 years ago when I was told the same things and it never happened. So they're really good people down there. It's a really good club, and I'm glad that I've been out and going and help. And if we can agree something, then yeah, I'd have no issue with staying. But it has to be right for all parties.
Would you like the chance to manage in the National League again and to have a crack at another club and, yourself to do it?
Definitely, yeah. I'd love that opportunity. I think, like I say, the biggest disappointment for me is when I read things and on Twitter, and I probably shouldn't get the hum about it, but I get, oh, he's out of his depth, he's this and that. And people don't know the full stories. People don't know. They can say I'm out of my depth from that. But we lost players. I missed out on signing players that I would love to have got. There's a lot of players that I would love to have got that I just couldn't get. I just couldn't afford to get. And there's other players that I would love to have kept that I lost, where I didn't want to lose them, but they went. And it was frustrating. I would have loved to have had a settled squad and had a few years and built it and got behind the scenes right and everything, but it never come to that. So I'm confident, yeah, if I was given the opportunity again, I could do a good job at that level, and I'd like to think above it, as I'm sure most managers, if you ask them, can back themselves and want to manage higher. I mean, you only have to look at Daryl McMahon. He's done an unbelievable job at Ebbsfleet, really. The pressure he was under, and you get to this stage and he was out of a job. And I feel for people like that, who's, again, someone that I think can manage at this level, if not above.
One of my little quickfire questions for the end of the podcast was going to be, give us a name, one a player that you feel got away in the transfer market, someone you were close to signing and you thought really would have made an impact.
there's been so many, honestly. I really wanted Michael Cheek. I really wanted Michael Cheek when we lost Piggott, and there was a chance, I think, of getting him at the time. But we couldn't afford to get him, which was frustrating, because I felt he was someone that scores goals and guaranteed score goals. And I know at Ebbsfleet he wasn't getting the opportunities. When he has been given them, he scored. But there's a big list. I'll put it this way, in the summer, I think on my list of, I probably had about a list of about 15 players that I really wanted, and on that list I probably got one of them. So that sort of tells you the sort of what I was up against, and so you kind of move the goalpost and go, okay, we've got to look at this one, we've got it. So, which was disappointing, because I think there was players that maybe if I could have still had an influence that we could have got, but but that wasn't the case. So it's difficult when that happens, because you plan and you think, right, I want this lad, I want that lad, and then you just can't get them, and that becomes tough.
So with Cheek or people like that, does it get as close as you ever sit down with them and you have a conversation, or it's just this is someone I've
spoke to his agent. His agent sort of said, look, this is what he's on, this is what he needs, and that was the end of that, really. Yeah. I'll sort of put it to the club, and yeah, it never happened.
That happened a lot.
Yeah, it happened a lot. I mean, we were really lucky with Joe Piggott in that he was a local lad that I got on well with, and we managed to deal with him, and I think we could have kept him, and we lost him ridiculously, really, when I look back at it, and that's frustrating. But yeah, there was a lot of players that we lost that we probably should have kept hold of. There was a lot of players that we could have got that we never did. But listen, it's easy sitting here, and one thing I didn't want to come across is, I don't want to come across bitter in any way. It is what it is. I take some responsibility for it, but I think it was a difficult time. It all moved so quick, and everyone was used to success. And I remember the owners at the start of last season saying we want to be top 10 or whatever, and I don't think some people realise how hard it is to do that in that league, and especially do it consistently. You might have a season where you get lucky, and I think if we'd have kept the squad together that when we lost Pigs and Zavon, we were up and around, just around the playoff places, just outside. We went to the FA Cup, we went up to, slipped my mind, we won 3-1 in the FA Cup against a League Two club, and you're looking at it going, we're having a good season, and all of a sudden that was taken away, and we slowly dropped, and it's tough to take. And that was the toughest time, because you know you're not far away. If anything, you want to add at that time, and it wasn't possible.
When you were playing, who was your favourite partner in the central midfield?
At Margate, it'd be Mark Munday and Elliot Martin. Elliot would never head a ball, so all I'd hear is Jay, and I'd run across the net and get kicked, and Munns was the same. But I really enjoyed playing with him. Probably the other one was Steve McKim. I love playing with Macko. When we was at Ebbsfleet, and I had that season when I keep saying Ebbsfleet, Gravesend, and I had that season where I got the goals, he kind of sat in there. He was probably one of the best captains I played with, and he was someone I still keep in touch with now, I've got a lot of respect for, but I loved playing with Macko. We understood each other. I remember pre-season going in, and Andy Ford moaning at us because we were doing the pre-season running, and I just signed, and me and him were like at the back, and he'd moan at us going, you're my midfield, you've got to be up there. But we kind of knew that when the season started what we could do and what we could offer, and I really enjoyed my time playing with Macko.
You like your dance music, don't you? You're a bit of a raver. So if you could choose to lead your team out at Wembley or take a DJ set in Ibiza, which would you go for?
And that'd be Wembley. Yeah, Wembley. Definitely. Yeah, I enjoy my time out. Obviously, I'm good mates with Nick Fanciulli, and I sort of go away a bit with him and been to some good gigs. But I don't think, I think football's my game, obviously.
If you could change one law of the game, what would it be?
Oh, do you know what? At the moment, I think it would be bringing in seven subs at a lower level. If you're talking for a sort of level we're managing at, I just can't get... You've got seven subs. I think it should be like it is for the FA Cup and the Football League. I think it should be that way for the lower leagues as well. That's only really, I think... The VAR thing, I was having a chat about this the other day, and I think if they're going to do it, I think they maybe look at one shout, like a bit like tennis where they get one call, maybe one call per half or something like that, rather than stopping it every time. But I think for our level and non-league level, the seven sub rule would be something they should look at bringing in sooner rather than later.
And which of your current players or former players do you see going on and being a good manager in the future?
Stuart Lewis. I think Stuart Lewis could go on and have a good career in management. He's someone that very, very passionate. I think he might have to control it a little bit, but he'll have a heart attack otherwise at a young age. But I could see him going into management, and I think it'd be good. I think he's very passionate. He knows his football. He's a likable character, and he's a winner. He's a winner at the end of the day. He wants to win things, and I think that's a good trait to have.
What was your favourite goal you scored during your playing days?
That's a long time ago. Forest Green away. I scored it. I've still got it on video cassette. That's how long it is.
Like
but it was an half volley from a long way out. I just turned it, but I can always remember it, and that was probably one of my favourites.
Jay, time has caught us again. Probably actually the longest podcast we've done so far. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing from your point of view. But
that's good.
Thanks very much for your honesty. Thanks for coming in to see us, and we wish you well. If that's with Margate at the start of next season or somewhere else, we look forward to seeing where it is.
Appreciate that. Thank you, fellas.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.